right, hello and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. This is episode 224. I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, and with me this week is the regular crew. We're all back together again. It's John Lindemann.
What up, what up?
It's Greg Leahy.
Ahoy, hoy.
And it's James Jones.
Hey.
Yes, I apologize for the probably difference in my audio quality. I'm recording with a different setup than normal because I'm on travel. But we are getting together just a very few days before Christmas to make the show go on. So we'll probably have a shorter episode for you this week, but we did want to do something. And new business is going to be interesting because it's only been like 4 days since the last episode was recorded due to the holidays and everything. So Greg and James won't have a whole lot to talk about. But since John and I were gone last week, I figured we would kick it off. And John?
Yeah, actually, one of my Black Friday pickups was Sin and Punishment 2, and I have yet to talk about it. So let's talk about it, shall we?
Yeah.
I know Greg could go on about it at length. But yeah, I mean, I'm really enjoying it. It reminds me a lot of a Space Harrier sort of experience. You know, the same kind of, you know, on-rails shooting sort of thing.
Well, the fact that you just float around now.
Yeah.
It's very much more like Space Harrier than the original Sin and Punishment.
Right.
And it's actually, I mean, one of the things I kind of came away with, I think I've played through, I think, about halfway. Actually, I'm at the boss of the nightmare section where you're kind of walking around with the flashlight.
Oh, yeah. Wait, you say the boss?
Yeah, like, I can't really say that about Sin and Punishment 2 because it's just, it just seems like boss battle after boss battle after boss battle. But the boss that I'm at in particular is the one where you're fighting in front of this temple. And it's kind of this boss with like a bird head, I think.
And the it's over the water.
Yeah.
That I got stuck there and I had to go to a FAQ.
Yeah, I mean, this is, I mean, I'm playing it through on easy just because I wanted to just see the whole game.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, that's pretty much where I hit a brick wall. I played it one morning for, you know, several hours straight. And that was the brick wall that I hit and I haven't gotten back to it. But yeah, I mean, it's really enjoyable. I really like the fact that, you know, they just kind of throw everything at you. And, you know, there's really no pressure. I mean, you want to perform as well as you can, but there's really no pressure in terms of hitting everything and all that kind of stuff. It's really good. I'm really impressed with it. It's actually longer than I thought it would be. For some reason, mm-hmm. I kind of thought that it would be a fairly brief experience, almost more arcadey, you know, than it is.
There's quite a lot there. For a game of its type, you know, I mean, the original Sin of Punishment, you can play through in about an hour.
Yep.
If you don't die.
Right. Which is an absurd statement to begin with.
I've done it without dying, I'll remind you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I bow to the
I tell you, I have not done Sin and Punishment 2 without dying, though. You will die a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it gets...
It's so much... The thing is, it's so much busier than an N64 game could ever be that it's a lot to get used to.
Yeah, I mean, this. I've actually been surprised that, you know, even on easy, how difficult some of the bosses are. I mean, there's the one boss, well, actually the whole nightmare section, that's where you also fight the turtle boss on the waterfall.
I hate that guy. Yes.
It's really difficult boss battles. I mean, and this is on easy, for crying out loud. I mean,
easy is really normal.
Yeah.
I mean, easy is, unless you're like Greg and you're like a Sin and Punishment pro already, mm-hmm. I think everybody should play Sin and Punishment 2 on easy first.
Yeah. And, you know, and it's usually, I mean, any other game, I would pretty much never play it on easy. I'll just automatically go to normal. But with Sin and Punishment 2, I don't feel any shame in doing that because I know how hard it gets. And I look at it as kind of, you know, training myself.
I'm surprised they didn't do a, you know, like, you notice the way with Prime 3 and Prime Trilogy, they kind of adjusted the nomenclature with the difficulty. So it's like, so easy sounds more like normal because the medium difficulty is actually veteran.
Yeah.
I could have seen them doing something like that.
So sadistic, completely sadistic and
mental.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm glad that Treasure still makes games like this, you know?
Because who else would?
Yeah, who else would? I think they're kind of brilliant for doing so because, you know, they have a built-in fan base that will buy every single one of those games, me included. I mean, they're the epitome of, you know, a development team that's found their niche and they're sticking with it and they're really good at it. So I don't know. I'm really enjoying it so far. It's just, you know, I'm glad that it's not as brainless as I thought it would be, even though it is, you know, fairly brainless, but
it's not brainless. It's that you have to turn it off because if you try to overthink the game, you'll just die.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yep.
It needs to be pure reaction.
Yep. Now, the cutscenes could probably be a little bit better. I mean,
no, they're perfect.
Yeah, you know, they're kind of...
I do envy everyone else being able to understand the dialogue, really.
No one can understand it, regardless of language.
I recognize the words, but these are not sentences.
There's no words there. Yeah. That's what I was trying to say.
Yeah, it's a pretty preposterous story. I couldn't even really tell you...
Does it even count as a story?
I guess the girl is... some sort of, like, they're going after the girl and he's protecting her.
If I could, I've heard this about the game. This is like a major spoiler. The girl is the villain from the first one.
Okay.
Really?
See, I played the first one so long ago, that's completely...
It doesn't make sense to me even, really.
Yeah.
But you know when you fight the Earth at the end of the first one, it's the same
character. You fight
character.
The Earth.
Well, it's a replica of the Earth.
Oh, right.
Well, I do think that even if you haven't even played the first Sin and Punishment, in Star Successor, you do get the sense, you know, from the dialogue from the villains, you do get the sense that maybe your characters are the bad guys and
yeah.
The guys that you're fighting are actually trying to protect the Earth from you. And basically, the two characters that you can control, their justification for going forward is, you know, they have to learn the value of friendship or whatever. Like, it's not really clear. It's not really clear what their goal is or what their motivation is other than, hey, we're friends, we've got to survive. So, yeah. I mean, if in fact you are playing as the bad guys and all the bosses that you're fighting are basically Earth Security Force, you're trying to protect Earth from you, that's really interesting. It's so easily lost in translation.
Yeah, it's lost in stuff like bosses that turn into killer whales. And dolphins and stuff like that.
Multiple killer whales.
that spit fountains of water at you, and you have to dodge them. But yeah, speaking of that, I actually really, really do like the dodge mechanic. You know, the fact that you can, I mean, with some of the bosses, you have to dodge repeatedly around the screen. Like, there's the one girl that you fight who says, you look like you want to ask me out on a date, but before you can do that, you have to fight me. She says something ridiculous like that.
Hey, look. That's how many of my first dates started. And I've got all the teeth to prove it.
But yeah, I mean, I thought that was really good. And I mean, it really does. I mean, I keep going back to Space Harrier, but it reminds me a lot of that. And I mean, even more so than some of the later Space Harrier games, really, because that series kind of got pretty shitty. I mean, you know, they didn't really do anything else with it at all.
A Sega series gets run down and shitty?
I know. Who would have thunk it? But yeah, so I mean, it's the kind of thing, like, if as a Space Harrier fan from back in the day, if I would have wanted a Space Harrier game to be made, then Sin and Punishment, Star Successor would be it.
All right, John, so what else you been playing?
The other game I decided to download, I'm a big fan of Super Stardust HD for the PS3. It's one of my favorite shooter games that I think is kind of underrated. But the developers of that game, a development house called Housemarque, they actually haven't made a game for quite a while, so I've kind of been wondering what they're up to. But what they have been up to is a game for the PSN called Dead Nation.
Dead Nation?
Dead Nation, of course, you know, because nobody's done a zombie game in so long, they decided to just, you know, do something completely different.
It's been about a week.
Yep. And, I was kind of like, when I heard about it, I was like, another zombie game, great. But, you know, I like them as developers, so I gave them the benefit of the doubt, so I decided to pick it up. And, it looked to me from the screenshots that it was sort of like a kind of a Smash TV kind of game, you know, where you could upgrade your guns and stuff. And it is that, but unfortunately, it's a lot slower paced than I thought it would be. I thought it would be just, you know, crazy, kind of almost like a berserk sort of thing where you're standing in the middle of a room and hundreds of enemies are swarming you and you're sitting there just shooting them all and everything like that. Like Left 4 Dead, only kind of more like Smash TV or something like that. But it's not like that at all. It's pretty methodically paced where you're moving, where you clear out one area and then move to the next area. There's tweaks on the concept. Like you can blow up cars and stuff like that. Like you can shoot a car and set its car alarm off. And then, you know, the zombies swarm to it. And then you can watch them all blow up real good. And you can upgrade your guns, upgrade your armor. But it's honestly kind of boring. I mean, it's pretty pedestrian in terms of just how, and maybe, you know, maybe it kind of opens up later, but just from the first, I played a little bit into it and it really doesn't change up very much.
That's interesting because the complaint that I heard about Dead Nation, and I think this was the review, this is Brad Shoemaker's review at Giant Bomb.
Yeah.
But he complained about the fact that the game is so dark that it's almost physically painful to play.
It is.
Because it's so difficult to see what's going on.
You pretty much have to squint through the entire game to see what the hell you're doing most of the time.
It's Doom 3.
That sounds awful.
It's pretty annoying. And also, I don't know if it's just because I was using the rifle, and then I switched over to the AK-47. The AK-47, it's not as powerful, but you can shoot, you know, you can sit there and just spray entire groups of zombies. But it's also the aiming is just, it's not as exact as I would like, because you're kind of aiming, you're sort of moving the sight on your gun just kind of around in a circle all the time, right? And so, but the problem is that the zombies on screen are fairly small. And a lot of times you'll be kind of tasked with shooting one zombie, and that's a lot harder than you would think it would be. You know, it's not so, because you'll move your joystick, but your actual sight will go a lot further than you thought it would. And it's like you can't sit there and like pinpoint like one zombie.
Yeah, because it plays like a twin stick shooter, like Geometry Wars or Super Stardust, right?
Yeah.
If you think about it, in those games, you almost never are trying to shoot a specific enemy across the screen.
Exactly.
It's usually a group of enemies are following you, and you just kind of shoot in their general direction.
Yep.
And whatever dies, dies, and then you keep shooting, and then more stuff dies. And so it's not, these aren't like pinpoint accurate games for the most part, and they're not designed so that you need that.
Mm-hmm.
I can see that being a problem.
Yeah, it's pretty annoying, because if you're fighting, you know, 100 enemies at a time, it really doesn't matter, because, you know, you're just shooting into a group. But there's several times where, you know, maybe you'll fight a particular type of enemy that is, you know, faster than you. And that's also, you know, one other annoying thing is, if you have to run, there's really no easy way to kind of run and gun. You know, there's no way to run away from something and then point your gun backwards and shoot at it while you're running away from it.
Huh.
So what I wound up doing was, you know, you would have to run a little bit, turn around, shoot, run a little bit more, turn around, shoot. So there's a lot of things like that where it just kind of messes with the pacing of it, where you would think it would be really smooth and fluid and just all out shooting and action. And it kind of causes you to slow things down and sort of bite off enemies in chunks. So, you know, I'm going to keep playing it just to see maybe if it improves. But as it stands right now, I'm kind of disappointed by it. I thought that it would be much better, judging by how much I like Super Stardust HD.
Mm. All right, man. Well, so I'll go next. And by the way, Greg, James, Nathan, and Carl did an awesome job last week. Thank you guys again.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Oh, no.
Two shows I've missed in the past month or so, and that's unusual for me. But yeah, I was graduating that night, so it's good to have that out of the way. And now, other than travel, there's nothing to keep me from recording on the horizon. But I did. I always enjoy listening to the episodes, so it was a lot of fun. And and James, I think you're underselling how much overlap there is between our tastes in games, because our regular listeners will realize that although we might give each other shit for the kind of games that we like to go on and on about, there is, I think you and I actually do have a lot of overlap and enjoy a lot of the same kinds of games.
Yeah.
As usual, you like to exaggerate.
I think we have much stronger disagreements on certain games than most people, though.
Yeah, well, James is a bit of a drama queen, though. I mean, let's just be honest.
Yeah.
Let's just call a spade a spade here. I mean,
so first off, I'll talk about a Wii game. I mentioned not too long ago that I had purchased Boomblock's Bash Party on Amazon. I got it as part of a deal, and I guess I'd had it for about 2 months and hadn't touched it yet. I'd opened it, but I hadn't played it. So since I came home to Alabama, I'm spending time with family, I thought, hey, I should bring this and actually play it with the family, because I rarely have people over who would want to play a game like that. And I haven't played Boomblocks of any kind in at least a couple of years, because I traded in the last one, and, you know, and I just finally got this one. So I was kind of excited to play some more of it. So I got home today, and I'm at my sister's house, and we popped it in and had so much fun that it literally made me lose track of time, and I was late for recording tonight. So I guess that's a pretty good sign that we were having a good time. My sister is her first time playing Boomblocks, so I let her go through the tutorial stages, which are also graded just like any others. So they're basically real stages. They're just very simple. And, you know, let her try out the different mechanisms. There are a couple new ones in this. There's like the slingshot and the cannonball launcher, but they seem to control very much like the grab and the throw from the first game. I haven't spent as much time with those, because from there we went into multiplayer. I really want to just play multiplayer. And so we're doing the competitive modes, trying to see who can knock down the most point blocks or, you know, whatever. And had a great time. But we were playing the game types that are the same as in the first game, because I figured those are a little more straightforward and simple, and I already understand them, so I can help if she was confused about what to do. So I haven't really spent time yet with the new modes, but the level designs that we were seeing and just the overall quality of the experience was just as good as in the first Boom Blocks, from what I've seen, from a couple of hours, I guess. And I'm looking forward to getting into it more. And I also want to try the download stuff, because at this point, Bash Party's been out for, what, like a year and a half?
Yeah.
So you would hope that, you know, if there ever was a dedicated community of people making interesting levels, then those would have been completed and accumulated by now, and those would be the ones to be downloaded mm-hmm. when you hit that button that says, give me more levels like this. And then I think also the EA studio that made the game, supposedly they were making new levels after the release that would also be pulled into that. So there might even, I don't know if I'll be able to tell which ones are which, but there might even be some kind of official download levels as well.
It's been a while since I've tried downloading any, but I have done playing the game previously, and I had some fun with, you know, there's some, you know, they tend to be maybe a little bit wackier in some cases, or they're trying to recreate something from other media, like the Battlestar Galactica or something, but there's some good stuff in there, and the interface just makes it so easy to find the kind of thing that you want.
Right. A lot easier than in the first game, where you had to have Wii system friend codes and stuff like that. So
no, that was not really viable on any kind of mass scale.
Right.
Well, I mean, that's just the friend codes in general really aren't viable.
Yeah.
Right. And this game just circumvents them. I mean, we popped the disc in my sister's Wii for the first time, turned the game on, and we could have just downloaded levels by clicking on that button. So it really is very straightforward. And, you know, with a game like this, when it already has 200, 300 levels in it, I don't know how necessary that feature is, but it is nice. I'm certainly not complaining, and I will try it out.
Especially if you like a certain kind of level.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You might not be hankering for more levels in general, but more of a specific type. I could see that.
Also, that game is the kind of one where, you know, you would come back to it over time.
Yeah, and the fact that it filters out by level type, and so you can always, it's always easy. You don't have to go searching through a bunch of menus. You're already in the part of the game where you're playing a certain type of mode. And if you like it and you play the first six and then they're gone, even if you're in multiplayer with friends, you know, you can still click on that button and bam, double up, triple up, whatever. Mm-hmm. Give me more. That's awesome. So I haven't actually tried it, but I'm really impressed by how out front it is and how apparently very easy it is to use and access. Also, I got the new Need for Speed Hot Pursuit on Xbox for cheap. On Amazon's been selling it for really cheap, kind of off and on. Some days it's almost normal price. Some days it's like half of normal price.
Weird.
I got it closer to half. I got it for under $40, and that game's been out for a month. So I don't know if it's Bomba or if it's just a loss leader for them. I don't know. Loss leaders don't make sense for Amazon, since you could just buy that one game.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it does seem to do stuff for them.
It builds up brand loyalty. I mean, the deals are so crazy that I'm checking every day to see what the hell is going on. I also bought Valkyria Chronicles on PS3 for $20.
As did I. I got in on that. I blame Johnny.
And I haven't touched yet. I haven't had time.
Yeah, we went back and forth in email, and I'm like, yeah, you know, I've been thinking of getting that game for a while. And he's like, well, you know, I just did order it from Amazon for $20. I'm like, you son of a whore. Because after that, I was like, I could not. It's one of the things, you know, and of course, I say this in my mind because I justify everything in my mind because it all makes sense, right?
No.
It was one of those games where I could see it never really dropping to really, really cheap prices, like $15 or $10.
Well, and it's a game I was always interested in, because it's kind of like Final Fantasy Tactics, but in 3D. And in, like, I think it's also a little bit like Battalion Wars, in that it's quasi-real time. Mm-hmm. It's like part real time, part turn-based. It's a weird game. I played the demo for it and loved it. And it is, the art style is incredible. So, I'm excited to play that, but I haven't actually played it because it came in while my parents were over and there wasn't any time for playing PS3 games or anything like that. Anyway, Hot Pursuit, Need for Speed is, you know, I don't care about Need for Speed at all. But the reason I got it is because it's made by the Burnout people, Criterion. And I do love Burnout. It's really, Burnout's the only racing game other than like Mario Kart or maybe F-Zero that I will ever consider buying. So Hot Pursuit is kind of like Burnout Lite. it's not as much burnout as I would have preferred. I think elements from the Need for Speed franchise kind of get in the way of my enjoyment of it, like the car porn aspect, because Burnout's always been unlicensed cars. So they don't spend a lot of time showing you the car or telling you about it or obsessing over the stats or whatever. It's just like, yo, here's this car. I don't even remember the names of any of them. I don't care. It drives. It's fast. It's faster than the one I had before.
Right.
And in Hot Pursuit, because it's Need for Speed and they have all these licensed Lamborghinis and Ferraris and everything, it feels like every time you unlock a car, it spends an inordinate amount of time sweeping the camera around it, and a voiceover comes on and tells you the history and the legacy of this car and how powerful it is, and it sounds like a commercial. It's, you can't skip it immediately. You have to like wait through like 10 seconds of it before you can skip it. It's too much for me.
Yeah, wow. That's not even done in Gran Turismo 5. And I mean, that's the most shameless promotion of cars ever.
This is the same game where they have police officers driving Bugatti Veyrons. I mean,
yeah, which is awesome. I think that's funny. I mean, I'm down with that.
Here's your $2 million squad car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think that's great. And they have to. I mean, the excuse is that the street racers are getting more and more exorbitant vehicles, so the cops have to keep up in order to enforce the law. So I think it works in the premise of the game, and they look cool. I mean, driving a Lamborghini with police officer decals on it, it looks cool. And I'm totally happy with that. What I'm not happy about with is like being force-fed propaganda from all these different car manufacturers. And that's what it feels like sometimes. You would never have to deal with that in Burnout. It's just a non-issue.
Mm-hmm.
And once you play the game, see, the funny thing is, I mean, they give you all these stats. They tell you the top speed and the acceleration. I don't think any of that really comes into play very much when you're actually playing the game, because there's so much rubber band AI, and you've got all these like almost Mario Kart style weapons and defensive mechanisms that you can use when you know, whether you're playing the cops or the racers. And also because of the track designs, I feel like all those stats kind of don't matter. And so they really the only reason to put them in is for car porn. And yet, if you really care about all that stuff, you'll probably be disappointed when you play it, because these cars, there's no way these cars feel like they feel in real life. And that's what Gran Turismo does.
Yeah.
In Need for Speed, they all kind of feel the same, even though they supposedly have vastly different horsepowers and turning mechanisms and whatever. So I don't know. To me, it's just kind of a weird mixture of elements between sim and arcade. And the game's super unrealistic. And that's what I want, because it's more fun for me that way. But there's too much of the real world in it, I think. In Burnout, that's never a problem.
Yeah.
I do enjoy the game quite a bit, and it's really fast-paced. I think playing the cops is definitely more fun because it's a little more focused. You know, you can always see the guy in front of you. You know, if you get him, this is over. So you can really be narrow-minded about it, whereas with the racers, you're fighting the other racers, but you're also trying to outrun the cops. And there's just a lot more going on, and if you get in the lead, that's not the end of the race. You have to keep the lead for a long time until you get to the end of these tracks. So I just feel like the cop is a little bit of a tighter package, and it feels like there's more action from moment to moment. But the racing is fun, too, for different reasons. I just don't enjoy it quite as much. The weird thing is, though, I mean, after coming off Burnout Paradise, which is, you know, really open world and kind of there's a lot of off-road, there's a lot of secret trails and just weird things you can do. And for the most part, you know, you have to get from point A to point B, but how you do that is completely up to you. You can take a totally different route than every other racer, and maybe it's faster just because you don't have to deal with all of them. Well, in Hot Pursuit, there's no city, really. All the tracks are kind of out in the country, and they're all pretty much point to point, except there's only one street that goes from that point to point. So everybody's on this one track. There's almost never a turn off. And the tracks are, for the most part, pretty much straight. I mean, they have bends, but there's no turns. There's just curves. So there's places you can power slide, but you're certainly not having to look at a map like you were in a Paradise. And it feels like a step backwards. I mean, it definitely feels more like the old Need for Speed games, but I don't know that that was a good thing. So overall, I mean, I certainly can't complain for the price that I paid, but I would much prefer a Burnout game. And I hope that's what they're making next, because I just feel like the crashing is kind of lame in this, and the damage modeling is really pulled back because of the licensing. It's just not as much fun. It just doesn't have the same attitude and the same, you know, sort of je ne sais quoi.
Well, it sounds like you really don't have as much reason to just mess around as you do in Burnout Paradise. I mean, in Burnout Paradise, it's fun to just drive around and just see what kind of wacky shit you can do.
Right. Yeah, this is very mission-based. It's very straightforward. It's race, 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 race. Supposedly there's like a free roam mode, but I haven't found that. I don't know how you can access that. And I don't know why you would want to, because the layout of the streets is so simple and sparse that it'd just be driving in a straight line for 5 minutes and then make a turn and then drive another 5 minutes in a straight line.
Yeah.
It's not that intricate network of streets and side routes and things like that that you get in Paradise. So I don't know why you would want to free roam in this game.
Yeah, it just seems ironic because it's like, it's almost a victim of Burnout Paradise, even though it was made after it. You know, it seems like almost a reversion of the genre. Like, this is the way this genre used to be 5 years ago.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. All right. Well, I guess I'll talk about Red Dead Redemption since I already sent it back. So I'm not going to be playing any more of it. I rented it because everybody is going apeshit over this game. I mean, I've heard so much about it since it came out in the spring. It sold tons and tons of copies. It's getting Game of the Year talk, you know, now that we're in December. And I figured, well, I should try it, you know, see what the fuss is about.
Yeah.
And I played several hours of it, and I still don't see what the fuss is about. I'm sorry. I know a lot of my friends are really big fans of Red Dead, and I don't get it. You know, I had a lot of issues with GTA 4, which we talked about on the show. I'm not going to rehash it, but I was hoping that Red Dead might be like a major evolution for Rockstar. You know, they would take this new setting and take it as a way to really kind of rewrite what they do with these games. And I will say the technology is clearly improved. It feels a lot less buggy. The draw distance and the overall graphics are just clearly better and more impressive, especially in the natural environment, which is, I think, more difficult to pull off and make it look beautiful and make it look convincing. Does a really nice job of that. It feels like you're out west, and they make it look like an interesting place.
Mm-hmm.
But the actual game design is really very, very close to the GTA games. And I think those games have really been left in the past at this point. I feel like they're starting to feel really archaic. And a lot of the obvious problems with that franchise aren't being addressed because they sell so many.
They don't need to.
Yeah.
Apparently, they don't think those are issues. Because the thing is, most people, apparently, the mass audience for GTA buys these games and then just farts around in the city and snipes people, innocent bystanders, and they think that's worth $60. And maybe it is to them. That's not what I'm going for. I want to play the game and get the story and do the mission. And those aspects of the game really haven't been evolved very much. They still feel really janky and kind of slapped together, and just the pacing of the game is awful. And this was a huge problem for me in GTA 4, where it just feels like it takes 30 minutes to get from one place to another, and there's nothing to do in between, or nothing that I want to do. And then I get there and I do this mission that's kind of mediocre and not all that interesting. And then I have to go back and travel all that distance in reverse to get back to where I was before to get the next mission.
Yeah.
And it's just not that much fun to me. It's just like, it's so much filler and, I don't get it.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because, you know, I know people that have this game as well. I mean, obviously it was a huge seller. And that was the first question I asked. I said, is it Grand Theft Auto 4 in the Old West? No, no, no. And they swore up and down that it was different, and, you know, but it doesn't really sound like it.
No, my immediate impression of playing, like I said, several hours of it is that it is exactly GTA 4 in the West.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you love GTA 4, then that's probably really novel, and that's great.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're hoping for a game that really is a lot better than GTA 4, I don't think this is it.
Yeah.
Not for me. It still has pretty much all the same problems, except the environment is more interesting. But not doing it for me. And James, did you have anything new since last time?
Nah, because, I mean, it's only been 4 days.
Understandable. All right, Greg, I know you had something that you had been reserving.
Yeah, I've been playing Pac-Man Championship Edition, DX for PSN. I've mentioned that I've had it since, I think, the live show. I've just been playing little short bursts of it over the past couple of weeks, and it's a lot of fun. I like high school games, first of all. I mean, I think the biggest thing I like about playing like a regular kind of score attack game is just the sense of momentum, because as you continue to rack up the score, what will happen is the game speed will just increase and increase and increase and increase. So at first, navigating the maze and avoid the ghosts and all that is very easy. But then once it sort of cranks up into this crazy speed, just going where you want to go or even just keeping track of Pac-Man can become quite difficult, especially when you've got like this huge conga line of ghosts following behind you.
And it is,
I mean, you could get, like, I think, up to 30 of the ghosts just chasing you around. And as I say, at high speed, it's very easy to kind of run into them in a way you might not expect at any moment. But the thing is, again, like I think a lot of good high school games, there's this sort of this tension, this kind of risk reward thing, because if you could just keep going with this huge train of ghosts behind you for long enough that you can get a pellet, you can then, after being chased by them for so long, just turn on them and devour them in this orgy of point scoring. It's it's like, you know, kind of what you said about Picross with the noise of the blocks breaking as you carve it out. Like with that, it's this slot machine jackpot noise of all the ghosts being eaten,
and it's a crescendo, right? Like the more ghosts there are, it just gets higher and higher and higher and higher.
Yeah, the score goes up. Like, at first they're only worth few hundred, and then and as it goes up, they sort of go up to a maximum of 3,200, and then you just keep earning 3,200, and the noise just racks up and racks up. It's, you know, it's great sort of moment of gaming satisfaction. It's also, obviously, I mean, it's always been in Pac-Man, you know, going back to the a very original arcade game, and here it's sort of extrapolated out to this glorious extreme. But it reminds me also of the epilogue to Zero Mission. You know, you just, you're being sort of hounded by these things for ages and you feel helpless, and then all of a sudden you can just demolish them without much of a thought. It is that feeling never gets old, really. And there's a decent amount of content in the game. I'd say you've got a lot of different mazes, a lot of different modes. You've got 5 minute, 10 minute score attacks. Then you've got like the time trials where you've got to eat a designated amount of fruit. You've got longer form time trials like ghost combo score attack modes and things. So it, obviously the gameplay of it that is always, you know, pretty simple and sort of satisfying in short bursts. That's always the kind of game it's going to be. But you could definitely sink, I think, a lot of hours into this over time, especially if you get into the kind of one-upmanship.
Is that a factor for you? I mean, do you have enough PSN friends?
Yeah, see, that's what I was going to say. For me, is that going to be a factor? Probably not, because, you know, anybody that's got this that I know is probably going to have it on XBLA anyway.
Yeah.
Because most people are on XBLA for online games and stuff. It just seems like, you know, if you have a high score type game like this, most people get it for XBLA, probably because that's, you know, where all their friends are. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that doesn't really help me in this kind of case. But for me, if I get a high score game that I like, and I've discussed this before, you know, stuff like Yoshi Touch and Go, Metroid Prime Pinball, I mean, you know, I had no context for those scores. I was just beating my own scores.
Mm-hmm. Right.
At least with this as well, you have got, like, what will happen is, for different courses, you get a letter grade based on how high you are relative to everyone else who's got the game registered on PSN. So, you know, you've got some context there. It's not as personal or as engaging as where you literally know the person.
So you don't have, you know, say, Johnny Metz humiliating you every time you turn on your Xbox 360?
I don't think that would happen with Pac-Man.
Sure happened with Geometry Wars.
Well, yeah. And then I had the reverse experience of turning it on a year later and finding Jared Rosenberg had just demolished me in every category.
And the sadness just gets passed.
It's more an obsession. It just rekindles the flame. And that's the fun part about it.
Yeah.
But I could buy this on Xbox or PSN, and I've thought about buying it because I kind of want it, even though I'm not the biggest Pac-Man fan. But it's tough because I would love to compete against Greg's scores. But if I got it on PSN, he'd probably be the only person I'd be competing with.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm
saying. If I got it on Xbox, it might be 5 people I can compete with.
Yeah, that is one of the more annoying things about being a PSN guy for some of these downloadable games. But Pac-Man is really right up my alley for a quick little revisit every now and again. And as we've said before, it's shame that it isn't on something like WiiWare. It seemed like it'd be very well suited. Not sure of the exact reasons.
Well, I thought you made a good point last week. You kind of implied that maybe it did have something to do with the leaderboards and the fact.
Yeah, I mean, that could be. I mean, that's obviously it's a speculation. It could be something to do with that. We don't really know, but I've got As we record now, I've got 2 days until Fluidity, so I'll probably be covered for Hydra Venture.
Oh yeah, that'll keep you busy for a while.
I'll be covered for WiiWare soon enough.
Yeah, Fluidity is a long game. I'm still not even halfway finished with it. I feel like I've played it about 10 hours. There's plenty to go around of that.
Mm, nice.
All right, well, that's going to wrap up this segment. So now we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're finally going to finish up Retroactive for The World Ends With You. So that's coming up right after this break.
Here's a quick look at the best original content at our website, now playing at NintendoWorldReport.com.
Well, it is still December, and there's still tons of games coming out, tons of games to review, and even though it's only been 4 days since we last did Now Playing, we've got a whole bunch more reviews for you. So, first up, Fluidity on WiiWare. Neil takes a look at this WiiWare title and tells you whether or not it lives up to the hype. Yes! Is it a water-based version of Metroid? Find out in his review. Yes!
Thank you, Johnny, for that completely unbiased reading of the script. Also, Pedro reviews Sonic Colors for Wii, and he tells you whether or not another game has fallen victim to the infamous Sonic cycle. You may be surprised at the answer that he gives in his review, so check it out.
Pedro also has a review of Super Mario All-Stars for Wii, which is really just an SNES game put on a disc. But he tells you if it's any good. Wait, it is just an SNES game on a disc. This is a factual statement.
And finally, also on the subject of Pedro and Super Mario All-Stars for Wii, we have Pedro's blog, The Glitch Gremlin, Visit Super Mario All-Stars, in which Pedro provides video evidence of a glitch he found in Super Mario All-Stars Wii. See what Nintendo's QA department missed in 1992.
Go ahead and read the review first, though. We don't want to spoil the conclusion for you.
And as I noted in TalkBack, if this was out on Virtual Console, they could patch it.
The price is wrong.
All right. Well, that is just a sampling of the wonderful content over at NintendoWorldReport.com. We are updating throughout the Christmas and New Year's holidays. If you're bored at home with your family, get your thrills and chills over at Nintendo World Report. Alright, we are back for part two, and this is actually part two of our Retroactive for The World Ends With You, the Nintendo DS alternative RPG. And John Lindemann didn't get to play very much of this since the last time, and he didn't have a whole lot to say about it. So we have excused him until the next episode. He's just going to chill out. So the three of us, Greg, James, myself, we're going to wrap this up. And of course, we've got some more forum comments from you, the listeners who played along. But first off, I wanted to ask James and Greg how far they managed to get in the game since the last time we talked about it, and what are their thoughts about all that has transpired since then?
So I have completed the game. I set it aside for a while because of one of the bullshit invisible walls you have to clear, where they basically said, all right, set the trend to whatever fashion sense they wanted it to be, and I hate those because they take forever and I have to go find stuff. And I picked it up probably a couple weeks later, and then just marathoned through the last week and a half in a couple days. The game does feel a little bit bogged down sometimes. The last few days feel really stretched out. If you're not familiar with the game at all, every day they get a mission, and they have to complete it by the end of the day. And should they fail, they die, essentially. And the last chapter doesn't really flow that way, so a lot of times it feels like they're just burning through days because they felt obligated to give you 7 days.
To maintain the same conceit, yeah.
Yeah, so it feels a little bit like...
It's the Mario syndrome.
A little bit. So it feels like you're walking through Shinjuku and then you get sent back to the scramble just for the purpose of making you try to remember how the hell to get to Cat Street.
James, this is the second time you've referred to the game world as Shinjuku.
It's Shibuya, yeah.
Is it?
It's definitely Shibuya. It's mentioned many times.
But regardless, there's no good map which is something that really annoys me about this game.
Yeah, there's a map, but it doesn't seem to correspond.
It doesn't show you what you think it's showing you, though. What it's showing you is it's showing you fashion trends.
No. I mean, it does show you routes, but I think the problem is that the screen perspective is always the same. You're always looking at things from kind of a certain direction.
Right.
And yet the map, the way the routes are linked up on the map is actually relative to each other.
Right.
So it's really odd. It's really, really odd the way the map is laid out. It's very hard to read.
Yeah, kind of. But the other issue is that it's not always easy to see, I need to get from this district to this district. Where is this place? Like a character will mention in passing, you need to go to point whatever.
Yeah.
And it's not always exactly clear where that is.
Well, I mean, to be fair, the game doesn't, there's not that much pressure on getting over there because there's not a real time limit, and there's no random battles. So really, you can take your time and figure it out, but...
At the end of the game, there are random battles.
Oh, well, that's interesting. Okay.
They're not like just as you walk around, but two things happen. Later in the game, when you scan, you can be attacked by noise in the area.
Hmm.
And also, as even after that, as you pass between regions, you can be attacked by a rather nasty set of Reapers. So later in the game, the Reapers just attack you pretty much whenever they want.
Hmm.
Just at random, as you pass between sections, you'll get attacked. Which isn't so much annoying because they're difficult. It's more annoying because those battles can go on for a little while.
Hmm.
And you're just like, I'm just trying to find a stupid cafe. Stop attacking me. I don't know. I mean, I said before we started that I feel some relief that I'm done with this game. And I'm glad it's over, but I'm not sure if it's because I really enjoyed what was going on. I mean, I wanted to see how they wrapped it up, so I pressed on through it, but I didn't feel super compelled to finish the game. And the conclusion is somewhat satisfactory. More so than I feared, less so than I hoped, if that makes sense.
Well, Greg, how far did you get and what did you think of?
Yeah, I mean, I advanced into the sort of the final act of the game, basically, so quite a bit from where it was last time. And in terms of how the game developed over that time, I mean, you have some significant changes in terms of how you battle, where your support character will change, you'll gain new abilities and things. And so they do put some wrinkles into the battle mechanics in that way. And narratively, in the second chapter, I did better with the Neku's companion in that, because he was just like a sort of ambiguous character, rather than Chiki, who was just this ridiculous sort of one-note character. But
right.
I did kind of sour on it a little bit in terms of gameplay, though, because I think, as James kind of touched on just a minute ago there, some of the tasks that you get set to progress through these days, it just seems like busy work, or, you know, the filler kind of stuff that, you know, James mentioned, the whole thing of getting a brand up, for instance, in an area. So he's like, okay, so I need to find a shop that sells these kinds of clothes, and then I need to put them on and like fight some battles with them or something.
I found that it's easier to do those with a pin.
Well, the pins is one thing, and you have to do some of those, but there is, in fact, at one point, a specific task where it is literally just clothes that they want.
There's
a particular day where you're faced with like a series of walls, pretty much like from each location to the next.
Yes.
During the second chapter of the game, which really kind of put me off quite a bit. I did push through it, as I said, and get to the third chapter, but you know, you just keep getting given these bits of busy work to do, and there isn't enough of, you know, what I like about the battle mechanics, as I kind of touched on last time, was the fact that you can create some pretty interesting structured kind of boss type battles when you've got, you know, the two characters, and it can be quite intricate and quite different from anything you've played before. The problem is, a lot of the time what you're doing is just fighting the same kind of generic enemies. There's some sort of much more formless, much more uninteresting battles where you just got a bunch of enemies around you, you know, irritant type enemies just nipping at your heels all the time. And so, yeah,
right.
They don't necessarily require a lot of skill to beat, but it's not like complete switch off stuff like you might have in a traditional turn-based RPG. So it kind of hit this awkward saddle point for me of like, well, they're not particularly engaging, but at the same time, I have to pay attention to them. I feel like to some extent, just enough attention for them to annoy me. So yeah. I didn't like the sort of emphasis on those kinds of things. And so really it felt to me like for a game that has all these intricacies to do with the battle mechanics and things like that, the actual tasks you were then given for a big chunk of the game were surprisingly crude and thoughtless.
So you're in week three now, right?
Yeah.
There's a point in there where essentially the entire game that the characters are playing has broken, and essentially it's become like the Thunderdome in there, and shit's just going crazy. And at one point, some of the game's controllers have just decided they're going to torment the two remaining characters, and they just basically give you this long chain of walls you have to take down. It's like six or seven walls in a row. And then you get to the end of this stupid chain and you expect something to happen. And they're just like, oh, nice work. All right, we'll see you later. And then they just go away. And you're like, well, that was a wasted day. And then the next day you go hunt them down again and then you fight them. It's like, well, I get it. You won't have 7 days.
Yeah, it does. Stuff like that, I think, both in gameplay terms and narrative terms, really does take a lot of the momentum out of the experience of playing the game.
Yeah, I mean, some of the walls are really easy to take down. Kill four enemies where I can see you. Okay, whatever. But then some of them are like, you know, we mentioned earlier, having to change the fashion trend. Or some of them are like, hey, I really want a hot dog. Go get me a hot dog.
Right.
And you're like, go to hell. I'm not going to get you a hot dog.
But that's the thing. You have that dichotomy between the ones that are kind of trivial and the ones that are more, you have to do more to get
right.
them done. But that, in either case, they don't involve some sort of application of skill or anything like that. It's all kind of stuff that's easily done in general. It's just a question of just how time-consuming it's going to be.
Fetchy.
Right. And it doesn't feel like you are rewarded for having... And remembering that the hot dog place is in Tipsy Tosei Hall.
Yeah, the quizzes are very annoying to me.
Oh, the quizzes. Reaper quiz number 4.
Why is that in the game?
I solved 2 of them on my own, and then I was like, F it. I just went to the internet. I'm like, give me the answers.
Well, I mean, to be fair, a lot of these Reaper walls that we're talking about are optional. And in some cases, they're worth getting through because you get some kind of prize for clearing the wall. They give you some money or a rare metal or something. And then on the other side, it either opens up kind of a shortcut that makes it more convenient for you to get to a certain place, or maybe it opens up a section of the city that you've probably been to in previous days. But in this case, it may be worth going over there because you haven't been over there in a while, and you can revisit a shop that you went to earlier in the game, and now it has new things. Or it has something that you couldn't buy before, but now you can, so you'd like to get back to it. And these are, again, very optional, just like much of the game, as we've talked about before. So I agree that I wish some of these challenges to open the walls were better designed and more interesting, but most of the wall clearing is optional.
But the section that James and I are talking about specifically is not. That is mandatory.
And later in the game, they tend to be not optional. there are optional ones there, but there tend to be many more ones that you have to take. In fact, there's a portion of the game where there are walls you simply can't clear. And if you go talk to the Reaper who's standing next to him, he's like, nope, go somewhere else.
Yeah.
What's difficult is that a lot of times you don't know what you're supposed to do. Or you do know what you're supposed to do, but you don't know exactly what they mean by it. So, you might have to go find a character that you can interact with. And it might just be some dude standing on the side of the street. But there's a lot of characters in this game. So, I don't know. Sometimes it doesn't feel like the game really wants you to know how you're supposed to progress.
Right.
So I'll spend a lot of time just wandering around.
Yeah, and I found that's annoying in the second week, because there are a couple days in the middle of it, and that's kind of where I am now. I didn't get as far as you guys. I did feel like I put in several hours, like maybe 10 hours since the last time we did Retroactive, and I don't feel like I really got that much farther into the game.
The days in week 2, so of the 3 weeks, week 2 has the longest freaking days.
Yeah. Either they're just really fetchy or really meandering, or it's just like super dialogue heavy, and I feel like I spent an hour just pounding through dialogue. and ultimately don't get much out of it.
It's some of the, and that's the thing, when you talk about dialogue heavy, just some of these weird little, as you say, meanderings into subjects that are just seem completely peripheral and don't merit the amount of time that's spent, you know, just these philosophical musings about the meaning of ramen.
I just
don't care. It does nothing for me whatsoever.
Look, Robin is all about love.
the ramen shop mission really got on my nerves because when you boil it down, if you look at it from, if you zoom out, that entire day is about you going back and forth between these two shops about 10 times.
Yes.
You don't really do anything. You're just listening to people talk for the entire day. It's not interesting. You don't really, it's so passive and it takes forever. And the dialogue isn't that interesting. I don't understand why that's in the game. Maybe it's meant to be a break. But I needed the opposite of a break. I needed the game to... I was already disengaged.
Some of the days are meant as breaks. It's also kind of a story conceit because the characters are basically saying, all right, we're going to give the players a break today.
I mean, the other problem about these days when you don't have a real mission, and that seems to happen a lot in week two, is that you're just, okay, well, we don't have a mission, so Joshua and Niku are just going to run around town and do whatever. And the game still has something, an objective that it wants you to complete in order to complete the day. But because you don't have a mission, you can't check your cell phone to see what the mission is.
Right.
So if you put it down in the middle of the day and then come back sometime later and want to resume playing, I that happened to me a couple times where I wasn't really sure what I was doing before and there's no way for me to check. And it wasn't that clear to begin with.
If you let the game sit for a couple seconds, you'll be able to talk to your partner. And they'll give you some hint as to where you're supposed to be going. But Joshua in week two, he's kind of an obtuse character to begin with.
Right.
And he's basically constantly telling Neku to do these things without any explanation as to why. So you and Neku kind of have a common bond going at this point because both of you hate the shit out of Joshua for most of week two.
Right.
At the end of week two, what you're doing makes a lot more sense. But up until that point, you're just like, I hate this dude. You are the worst character ever.
No, I believe that's Tally.
Well,
I was ready to get Shiki back about 2/3 of the way through week two.
Me too. Absolutely.
Because Joshua is just obnoxious.
But I didn't really like him as a character. I found him less irritating. Yeah, because he was meant to be obnoxious. I mean, he was meant to be
mission fucking accomplished.
He was definitely meant to be rubbing neck in the wrong way and like I said, being an ambiguous character, like you don't really know, you know, why he's doing what he's doing and stuff, so it had some level of intrigue there. But as I said, the problem with that is just when you have these sort of ponderous sections involving these side quests, these fetch quests, it kind of took the sting out of that element of the story of, you know, the real big questions about, you know, why are they there? You know, what happened before? What's going
to
happen
and
next?
Joshua obviously gets better explained later.
I just don't know that I care that much.
No, I mean, it's kind of an interesting ending and how each character's role in the UG is kind of explained better. But when you beat the game, you unlock these mini quests that are spread throughout each chapter. And you have the ability to jump between days to go whatever day you want. And it basically explains backstory elements of each of these characters. So stuff like maybe there was something weird that you noticed about a character at a certain day that the game doesn't really felt like it needed to explain better. So when you jump back over there, it sort of explains what's going on. But honestly, I'm just kind of happy to be done with it. I went and played Another Day, which is this side story that's not really based on anything that had to do at all with the previous 3 weeks. It's all about playing that stupid table game.
Oh, the pin slammer.
Yeah, the 10-pin slammer thing I think bears mention because that's not in the first week at all.
Is it? I thought it showed up at the very beginning, at the very end.
No, I think you can play it in multiplayer from pretty early on, but I don't think it becomes part of the story until the second week. And I was surprised at how it's implemented, I guess. I thought it would be more of a strategy game.
No, it's frantic action.
It's kind of just a dumb smacking pins into each other. It reminds me a lot of Beyblade, which I know Zach was bitching about on Newscast a couple weeks ago, and I reviewed a Beyblade game for GBA years ago, and it's pretty much the same thing. So, I mean, for the target audience of this game, I can see they would probably be familiar with this type of thing, and and they might find that to be really cool, but I don't know. It's not good.
This other day thing is Neku entering a 10-pin slammer tournament, and it actually gets really hard, because what they do is they, throughout the game itself, you only ever play it one-on-one, but actually, 10-pin slammer is a four-player game.
Oh.
And with four players in it, it's a bit more chaotic.
It's already chaotic one-on-one.
It's a lot more chaotic, because you'll see up on the little radar screen, like, three pins just flying around. You're like, I'm just going to stay over here where it's safe. You guys take care of that. And then inevitably somebody comes screaming from the other side because they got blasted into you and you get knocked off the edge.
It also reminds me of, was it Super Monkey Ball 1?
Monkey Fight.
Monkey Fight. Yeah.
Knowing when to use the powers and stuff is helpful. If you can time things just right, you can win these fights really easily.
Yeah.
It is a more interesting game when there's four of them flying around. And when somebody's eliminated, they're not gone. I mean, they lose, but they get this weird icon they can knock around that hurts you way more than another pin does. But you can't really knock them away. So they just become more of hazards than anything.
F0X, death, jackpot style.
I mean, we've been hammering on this game kind of hard. I mean, I did enjoy it to an extent. It's a very, presentation-wise, it's very well put together.
Yeah, oh yeah. I just feel like I appreciate the novelty of it and how different it is from other games, but that at this point, I've been playing it for 20-plus hours. It's worn off.
Really? You're about 20 hours now?
I would guess.
That's because that's about where I feel like I cleared it.
Maybe I'm playing more side quests or just playing
it
slower.
It's possible, because a lot of times I was like, I am completing this mission right now.
Yeah.
And then you'd complete it, and they'd be like, next day! And you're like, damn it.
Yeah, I just feel like it's outworn its welcome for me.
Well, what the game does do well is every character you're supposed to hate, you hate. I mean, every character is like the biggest douchebag ever. And you're like, I hate...
I mean, I get it might be a spoiler to say that when I saw who the final partner character is, it's like, oh, I'm done.
I know. That was how he talks and everything, and all his decision-making process and his ability to encourage you is just so fucking broken. You're just like,
also,
I hate you.
When you get to that point and you get another partner character, I don't know whether the battle system really needed like another layer of getting more convoluted, you know, which is kind of what happens to some extent. Yeah. But I just feel like the end of the two chapters that I've played have got, you know, big boss fights.
Yes.
And they have a structure to them. You know, the bosses have like very kind of clear tells. You know, there'll be times when you're fighting other little enemies as well. But even though they're quite difficult, I just feel like it's very kind of manageable in my mind. You know, it's like, okay, that's the boss. These are his attack patterns. Learn the attack patterns. And then with them learned, you know, you can manage the two screens at once to enough of an extent to beat him. And he feels like, yeah, that is a really kind of uniquely satisfying event in a video game, because, you know, you haven't had that kind of gameplay with this whole two screens, touch screen, D-pad, all at the same time thing before. But, you know, I haven't got an hour count on how long I've played, but it's probably something similar to what Johnny's played, maybe a little bit longer. And it's happened twice. In all that time, you know, that slice of enjoyment I really like has happened twice. It's just not enough. And, you know, the regular enemies just don't do it for me, you know, to nearly the same extent.
The regular fights are too repetitive. There aren't enough types of enemies. I mean, supposedly there's like 100 different noise.
Yeah, there are.
I haven't found nearly that many. I'm fighting the same five things over and over again.
I cleared the game with 40% of the noise.
Yeah,
which seems really low. So which must be like there's – when I went through in and I picked a chapter just at random just to go in there and kind of – and goof around and see if it lets you keep your items and stats and stuff, and it does. You know, there's the different types of noise symbols. There's the smaller ones. There's the medium. There's the bigger medium. And there's the big ones. There was a – I turned on scan in one place, and there was this giant noise symbol floating around. I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to F with that. That looks – like I hadn't seen that when I cleared the game, and now that I see this thing, I want nothing to do with you. But I have a feeling that's probably some of the stuff that you don't get through the end of the game. All I know is that guy looked fucking fierce.
Well, I appreciate there's a lot of post-game content. I probably won't ever get to it.
No, I almost certainly won't.
In playing the actual main game, the fights are getting really repetitive at this point. And then also, to Greg's point, most of the normal battles feel mostly like crowd control.
Yeah, brawler type. I mean, James kind of said it the last time, you know, that there's a kind of brawlery kind of element to it.
Get them grouped together and use some attack that hits more than one enemy at the same time. Repeat.
So later in the game, about halfway through week three, as the game starts to unravel, there's a lot more of those boss fights that Greg was mentioning, because basically everybody's decided now that chaos is taking over. They're just going to take their shot at you while they can.
Well, I mean, that's kind of encouraging for me, maybe thinking about trying to, you know, I'm near the end. I would quite like to see the resolution and whatnot, but I've got a question, however narratively driven that is, you know, irrespective of that, I have to question the distribution. As I said, to have played right. as long as I have and to have got only two really significant boss encounters, it's just...
'Cause I think there's at least four in the third week.
Right.
And at the end, it's, you know, it's the multi-phase boss battle, of course.
Oh, of course. I mean, I'm sure it goes on forever.
Yeah, it does. Day seven is kind of just a string of boss battles with you walking in an uncrowded room.
I mean, I just think there's also, though, they could have done more to, you know, blend some sort of structure or distinctiveness to more standard battles. I mean, there was one part of the game, I didn't really enjoy this particular part, but it just made me think that they could have been a springboard for other similar challenges. But there's a part where... I think it's in the wall breaking sequence that James and I have already discussed, but there's a bit where they say, okay, you're going to have to do this battle, but we decide what pins you get
yes.
to use. So your normal sort of, you know, team of pins, if you like, that you've built up and you've leveled up and you got used to get taken away. And it's like, okay, you've just got these two pins. Beat these enemies, and I couldn't get anything to work. I was like, "What the hell? What the hell kind of pins are these? They don't work.
What sort of
dick move is this?" Well, it turns out they're pins that are activated by blowing on the mic.
Oh,
what?
So you know, I just had to blow on the mic, and that was pretty much like the win button in
the. The whole challenge was figuring out how to use them.
Yeah, it was that's how that. So it was almost like a kind of puzzle in a way. I didn't even know there were pins like that. I hadn't used any. That was a kind of a desperation kind of move. You know, what DS feature haven't they used? And sure enough. But the thing, what I thought about that was, you know, yeah, I mean, it could be the case that people might kind of get, you know, stuck in a rut with a certain lineup of pins and just kind of using the same kind of techniques over again. It could have been quite an interesting idea to say, okay, well, you know, a certain number of fights. What they could have done by enforcing a range of pins on you, and maybe they could have actually told you what they did, you know,
would have been nice.
Ex ante, just to make it a little bit more fair than that particular encounter. But by enforcing a roster of pins on you, they could have, again, structured the battle in a way. You'd really designed it more deliberately rather than, I think the problem is because it's so customizable and all that, you've got all these different kinds of pins and all that. That's why the normal battles, I think, are as kind of brawlery and aimless as they are, because it has to be open to all the different ways that you could win them.
Right. So what I did in that one is I basically just used Joshua exclusively. I just had Neku run around and not take damage. And Joshua just slowly killed everything. So what's funny is about halfway through week two, Joshua gets his jump attack.
Yeah.
Which is with jump in the air, and he just floats around and attacks stuff, which is a neat little allusion to later in the game. But he's like God mode when he jumps in the air.
Yeah, I mean, each press of the D-pad like does damage. Like, it is a major upgrade.
Like Shiki has an aerial attacks, but they're not anything compared to Joshua's aerial attacks.
Right,
they're win buttons, and nobody has anything like that. So it was okay at that point because I had his win button. So basically, it was just all right. Don't take damage. Don't take damage. Don't take damage. Because I lost my healing pins too. Now, what that fight did force me to do, though, was I went back and reevaluated what pins I had, in part because I was trying to find the stupid pins they gave me to figure out how they work. And I didn't find them, which is annoying. But
no, me neither.
I switched out my bullet pin, which I had leveled up like day 4 of week 1 and completely max leveled.
All right.
And it does like 20 attack, and the one I switched it with has the same number of attacks but does like 40.
Right.
I was like, wow, I should have done this a long time ago.
If they'd been more proactive with those kinds of battles, it might have really encouraged you to experiment a lot more. But this is just this sort of one bizarre one-off that is almost just a bit of a dick move anyway. But it suggests a potential to bring a bit more structure and a bit more of an interesting dimension to these battles that you inevitably have to partake in.
So what's interesting, though, is that particular pin, the original one I had, stopped leveling up after level 3.
Yeah.
And it went to star. This pin kept leveling up.
Yeah, so the current pin I'm on is like nearly, for my projectile, bullet style attack, is at level 5 and nearly at level 6.
Yeah, so what happened is it went to level 5, and I didn't even know this could happen. The pin evolved.
Yeah.
And it just, this pin has evolved, and it turned into a different type of projectile.
I've had a bunch evolve.
Really?
Yeah.
No, I never needed to change pins, so none of the starting pins actually evolve on you.
I've been switching out pins very often because once I master one and it stops leveling up, I switch it out for another one because I would be so bored with this game if I didn't switch out the pin.
I've done some tinkering just for the sake of it. I mean, definitely.
Yeah, see, I found a set that for me allowed me to know, like, all right, I've tapped enough times, I'm going to be out of bullets. I don't need to look to see I'm out.
Yeah, sure.
So then I start slashing. All right, I'm out of slashing. Now I need to drag and do the fire. Okay, now my bullets should be back. So I could devote all of my attention pretty much to the top screen.
You don't have to keep looking at those meters to see if it's recharged.
Right. So, but what's funny is there's a pin that you get somewhat later where it's time-based, and every time you tap it, it shoots out this wave of electricity in all directions. And the faster you tap it, the more you get during the time it's alive. Well, in that last chain of bosses, I tapped it so many times my arm felt tired. Because it does a ton of damage, and it does it many times per tap because it sweeps across and hits him multiple times.
Right.
But I was just basically going...
No, I mean, I think the range of different pins and attacks is one of the coolest things about the game. There's a great deal of variety. Now, as we somewhat touched upon in the first part of this discussion a few weeks ago, to some extent, it's a bit of overreach because it might be a bit more than the DS touchscreen interface kind of handle when you've got all these different kinds of slashes and, touchscreen gestures all at once, kind of competing with each other in some cases. But definitely just the number of cool attacks, like sort of how they're visualized, all sorts of different things. There's a great diversity of imagination at work, but I just don't think that's effectively capitalized upon with the way the game is designed, with the way that the tasks are apportioned to you. It is up to you to just experiment for the hell of it.
Yeah, that's the most fun thing about the game to me. And if I wasn't doing that, I would have quit a long time ago. I'm surprised James played it.
It's just James' single-minded sprint to the finish.
It says a lot about how versatile the game is. You can play it in a lot of different ways, as we've noted, and clearly, I'm surprised that you can stand to play it that way, James. But
I mean, it didn't tend to summon people with the pin unless an objective told me I had to.
And you wouldn't have much reason to if you're not leveling up pins.
And I didn't really need to level up that much to beat the boss battles. And if I ran into a boss battle that made my head hurt, I just went, all right, easy mode. I don't care.
Well, this is the thing, isn't it? I mean, the boss battles or your big battles you might have, I mean, they are kind of skill-based, so to some extent, it's not something you're necessarily going to think you're going to have to grind to do.
Right.
You can get better by just dodging better and learning the patterns better. So you're not necessarily going to be too worried about, we certainly don't have to be too worried about building up your pins to do that. And as James also mentions, if you're really just hitting your head up against the wall, there is that retry on easy option that comes up on the game over screen.
Yes. And then you just go like, all right, boom, done.
Yeah. All right. Let's get to the one forum comment that was posted since our last.
Oh, you guys suck.
Our last retroactive. That is kind of sad. I think a lot of the people who posted in the thread had played the game before and were very familiar. So a lot of the comments were story spoilers. We had this on Mother 3 as well. And that's fine. It's a good that we give people this place that they can talk about that stuff. But we can't read those on the show because we don't want to spoil it for everybody else. So I don't think very many people played along with us, and that's okay. I understand. This is one of the more expensive games that we've done for Retroactive. But the one post we got in December is from Mario is French, and he said it's an awesome game, great story, one of the most memorable that he's played on the DS. Looking forward to a sequel if they ever make one. But a point of contention is that he knows the game's controls are so bad that I actually got pissed off and unconsciously tried to break my DS in half. Whenever you try to do one move, it either doesn't work or it interprets it as input for another pin, as we've talked about.
I agree. It is truly evil when it does that.
Yeah, and this is a new comment. This is something no one else has brought up. If I didn't have a screen protector on the touchscreen, it would have had so many scratches. Excuse me while I replace the screen protector on it. Now, this is something that I found, and I don't know if it's the nature of The World Ends With You. Maybe it's just I noticed this a little bit on when I was playing a lot of Picross 3D, but you do use the touchscreen so much and in so many different ways in The World Ends With You. It's starting to make me realize how old my DS Lite is and how crappy the screen is. I've abused the screen. I've played many hundreds of hours of gaming on it, and it's starting to show. It's not so much the scratching, but I've noticed that now sometimes I have to push a little harder with the stylus to get it to register. It seems like whatever gel or whatever layer they've got there is breaking down, maybe, or it's just delaminating a bit. And so I'm starting to feel like, man, I want 3DS to come out soon because I really need to replace this thing. It's getting crappy. And I do think there are certain attacks or certain things that you do in The World Ends With You that are on Elite Beat Agent scale of, you know, drawing.
Oh, yeah, of just frantic scratching.
Doing it very fast, large gestures on the screen. And you start to wonder, like, this might not be very good for the screen. So I did want to showcase that comment because I think it's an interesting observation.
No, I think sort of on the whole 3DS time horizon issue, I'm kind of more comfortable playing this knowing that I'm about to, you know, in a sense, replace the DS Lite. You know, if I was playing this back when it came out, I think I would have been much more sensitive to that whole issue of abusing the screen.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because my XL screen is immaculate. It's not quite so immaculate now after this game. Like there are little micro scratches you can see in it. I mean, it's not terrible. It's just like,
I've never been a screen protector guy. I just feel like, especially with Nintendo, they're pretty robust out of the factory because they know, you know, they know kids are going to play them and they know people are going to play them long periods of time. So I just generally don't kind of deal with that, but if I had a brand new DS, especially something like an XL, knowing what I know now, I probably would use a screen protector before I played The World Ends With You.
Yeah, I would have too.
It's good to know if you are thinking about embarking on this adventure at some point.
And I mean, I didn't use the big giant jumbo stylus either, so I can't even blame that. I probably should have, though. My hand might have felt better afterwards.
Oh, for sure.
God, can you imagine playing this with the old cocktail stick stylus?
Oh,
yes,
God.
I can, because I played Elite Beat Agents with it.
Well, we're going to have to wrap up our discussion. Thanks for everybody for listening and following along. I hope you found it interesting. I hope we did the game justice for the super fans on the forums who love it so much. I hope you think we gave it a fair shot and found some of the interesting things about it that are part of why you like it.
I do encourage people to finish the game if they can get through the second week, because the third week is so short by comparison.
Right.
You know, most of the days are less than an hour, so it's not so bad.
Yeah, because I think, you know, when you're in that second week, it almost gets a little bit daunting because you start to think, okay, well, this is it now. You know, this is the days just seem to get longer and longer, and some of the tasks seem to be more onerous. It does feel like the game's length is sort of yawning out in front of you. But I mean, even from what I've played in the third chapter, it seemed to be speeding up. And if that only kind of accelerates, then I could see myself finishing it.
So what's funny is, at the end of week one, when you realize, you're not done, that's a little bit heartbreaking. You're like, really? The very game itself is contriving to screw me. And then in week two, though, you've lost that pretense. You're just like, I know the game's going to screw me somehow, so I'm just going to deal with it. At the start of week three, though, you know there's no week four. It tells you at the beginning.
Yeah.
There is no week four. This is it. So it does. There's a real light at the end of the tunnel, and it does give you a little bit more of a giddy up to move on it. Even though the game itself isn't really that long in terms of the number of hours.
Compared to RPGs.
No, in the genre, it's very short.
It's long enough for me, but...
It depends on how you play it, again.
I get... but even if you went after everything, it's not, you know, it's not a 100-hour game.
It's not DQ9, that's for sure.
No. So, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, it's a relatively short for a JRPG, even by handheld standards. I mean, it's shorter than Golden Sun, which I beat in a handful of days, so... It's just, this game is a lot more physically taxing than that
one. Yeah.
Well, maybe I'll keep playing. You know, maybe I'm almost to the point where the end is in sight. I know for this podcast, the end is definitely in sight because we got to wrap it up right now. But thanks for everybody who listened and followed along. And we'll have news on the next Retroactive in the early part of 2011. So I look forward to that.
Well, don't forget, this episode's going to be going out after Christmas, so it'll be the last one of this year.
Happy Boxing Day.
So this is the end of our third year.
That's right.
Presiding over RFM.
That's true.
We'll be going into our fourth, let's put it that way, to make it sound even scarier.
Unbelievable. This podcast can almost go to school.
Well, the podcast itself can go to school.
Yeah, it really, though.
It's in Head Start. It's talking up on crayons and play mats for kindergarten. Pretty amazing. That's going to end the show. Thanks to James, Greg, and John for doing this on a holiday week. And thanks to everybody who's been listening that long. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Well, that is just a sampling of the wonderful content over at NintendoWorldReport.com. We are updating throughout the Christmas and New Year's holidays, so go check it out if you're bored at home with your family.
Yeah, we aren't even visiting our families. We aren't even seeing them. We're writing, all right?
Get your thrills and chills.
I'm not writing.
Over at Nintendo
so feel bad,
World
people.
Report.
Feel bad. Feel for us.
Feel guilty.
Feel bad. That's a great way to end the segment.
Unhappy New Year.
Let me try that again.
Just cut the ending from another episode on there.
No. Okay, I'll
I look. Would if I could.
Oh, it's all gone wrong. We only had 4 items.
I'll do it. We are planning to keep updating throughout the holidays, so be sure to keep checking the website, even on Christmas Day, to be disappointed by the lack of
updates. Best laid plans.
Let me start over. Nintendo World Report will keep updating throughout the holidays, so be sure to check back every couple days and find out what's been added.
You guys are the worst readers ever. Every couple days? Come on.
That's reasonable, right?
No, sure. every hour.
It doesn't matter.
Come on. Let's wrap it. Okay.
Just
all right, I'm going to mute myself before I... I'm done.
It's like
I'm going to mute myself.
Rundle fly thing at the end of the fly is like half telepod. It just needs to be shot in the face.
I'll wrap it up. I got this.
Okay.
Check out the site. Peace.